high water. Actually, it's a little later than 1:30, but here we go. I have a couple of announcements, which who's ever here will hear it, and whoever isn't won't. But if Emma Diedrich Cullen is anywhere around, could you please see me before you come up here and talk? And if Janelle R. Duxbury is here, would you also please see me before you do your thing? Because I need for you to sign stuff and give me your life's history and things like that. This next session is being presented by Mr. Seth Winner of Winner Sound Studios. It's called Nothing in Moderation, an 80th anniversary tribute to Ernie Kovacs and his use of music on television. Seth Winner is the audio engineer, has given ARS programs in the past concerning his participation in various archival and commercial ventures. His presentation this year is devoted to one of his passions in keeping alive the work of probably the most inventive personality from the golden age of TV, that would be Ernie Kovacs. Specifically, who's that clapping? Specifically, Seth will explore the pioneering work of Ernie Kovacs. Or Ernie Kovacs' use of music in his television presentations as a tribute to honor his 80th birthday this year. So, without further ado, Seth Winner and Ernie Kovacs.
Thank you, Vince. Roaming through the internet, I found the following written by Robert David Sullivan, taken from Boston Phoenix's 50 Years and Counting, a retrospective of the most influential programs from television's first half century, and this is what he wrote. The humor of Ernie Kovacs was uniquely suited to television. Out of control cameras and other technical difficulties might disrupt the skit, and many relied on repetitive elements. Kovacs's Nairobi Trio was a metaphor for the TV series itself. Three guys in the same ape costumes pretended to play the same instruments in synchronization to the same piece of recorded music, but the finale was slightly different each time. Kovacs also pioneered music videos, making familiar objects like file cabinets and roasted turkeys move to some twisted melody. Since his death, nothing on commercial TV has approached his anarchy, and it seems impossible to recapture that now. Well, what can one say about the comedic genius that was with us for too short a time? When Ernie Kovacs left this world in 1962, 10 days short of his 43rd birthday, a major piece of pioneering and groundbreaking television development went with him. He was adored by his colleagues who would do anything for him. His generosity seemed to be endless. In fact, on his tombstone is inscribed the following, "Nothing in moderation. We all love them." For those of you who are lucky enough to remember Ernie's programs in the early 1950s that started in Philadelphia on WPTZ through his final ABC specials in 1961 and 62, this will be like visiting an old friend. For those of you who missed that time in TV, boy, are you in for a treat this afternoon. Before we start, I want to thank a number of people. This gentleman sitting over here, Joe Patridge, who did the editing for this program, which would have been near impossible to do. And then my friends Al Lisitsky and Bob Carlson, who are adding Kovacs files and were able to get a lot of the material you saw off of Comedy Central before they stopped broadcasting it about 5-6 years ago. Well, let's get started. In 1956, Kovacs was given the task of replacing Sid Caesar during the summer break. Most of his reputation is based on these series of specials, which were essentially 9 during the period of July 2nd to September 10th of 1956. Here is the opening to the August 27th, 1956 NBC summer program, preceded by Ernie's own way in explaining the purpose of this program, with a little of his back of the humor style of comedy.
Actually, there is a purpose to this program, although it may not seem so to the naked eye, if I may use that expression on television. The inherent love that I have for music is really why I'm here. The money means nothing. The money is nothing, consequently it means nothing. It is very little. But it is a desire to illustrate music, taking sound to sight, more or less.
And away we...
Well,
you. I just got in at 1 minute of eight exactly, and we had a very patient crowd. We always get in thirsty. Everybody's running around. We rehearse till about seven something, and get in. Off a little bit. Gee, I hope none of that milk gets in there. There now. Wipe off most of the broken glass. Yeah. Sometimes you get here and you don't have a chance to get a drink of water. Hurry up, we just started. How could I be late? Did you see that? Give me the speed up. I just got here. It's only about 3 minutes away. What a grouch.
His love for music extended to various degrees and insanity and sanity. I have three excerpts from the summer shows we're going to see now. The first one is based on the polka from the Golden Age of Shostakovich, which he describes as a tourist in a castle in England, and this is essentially what I think is one of the earliest music videos to have been done on television live. What you're going to see is a process of what is called matting, where one image is imposed on the other and things disappear on top of one another. But it's absolutely astonishing that he would dare to do something on live television where anything could happen. And then his own version of the Lucia Sextet, with his wife Edie Adams in there, and Henry Lasco, and Peter Hanley, who was a rather talented tenor at the time, who was on a number of his shows way back to Dumont. And then finally, a couple of pianists that he kind of discovered and put on a show because they had done something that was so weird that no one could believe it. Ferranti and Teicher, who were essentially Juilliard graduates, were a duo piano team. Couldn't make much of a career until they started doing a la Henry Cowell with prepared pianos, putting chocks in, using sticks on the keys, and all that kind of crazy thing. So what we'll first see is from the first show that he did of July 2nd, 1956, of a tourist in England going through a castle, and then from July 16th of 56, it's entitled Making a Singing Commercial, and the announcer you'll see coming up is the late Bill Wendell, who passed away a couple of months ago. And David Letterman hired Bill Wendell when he saw some of these Kovacs videos at the Museum of Television and Radio. And then we'll see Ferranti and Teicher from the last special done on September 10th of 1956.
Tell that horse I'm doing a single. It'd smash him. We have what I think is the most exciting dance. Some time ago, I talked to Bob Hamilton. I said, Bob, what would you do with a thing like this? And he said, I quit. And I said, besides that, he said, well, I don't know, and so forth. And all of a sudden, one day he came back and he said, we'll try it. And I think it's an exciting dance. It's about a tourist in England who goes to a castle. And as she's there, strange things begin to happen.
Thank you. Many viewers of television and listeners to radio who sit at home listening to commercials never fully know the behind-the-scenes activity that goes into the making of these recorded commercial jingles. We will take you backstage to witness the rehearsal and actual recording of a singing commercial.
Miss Swope and gentlemen.
Maestro.
You said that. Today we are recording a singing commercial for gum stickers. Any questions? Miss Swope?
Whose? Whose gum stickers?
Nobody's in particular. Anyone's, everybody's gum stickers. This is institutional copy. All of the gum sticker people have contributed toward this commercial to sell gum stickers to the public.
What kind of gum stickers are these, Maestro?
We can't. You put in notebooks so the pages won't get torn. Is that right, Maestro?
I believe you've defined the product rather neatly, Mr. Thornton. New watch, Mr. Hemming?
Yes, sir.
Very nice. Not now. Later, perhaps. Tomorrow. Or the next day. Well, then. Letter A.
Now to high students and to great big burly businessmen in your brief.
Now then, Miss Wolfe, from letter A, Belmo, please. Just the piano. It will be a cappella with piano. All right, Mr. Wolf and gentlemen, remember we are going to sell gum stickers on an institutional basis. Let us not lose the dignity of the product in our rendition. Pianist, would you play those last few bars, please? Now, Miss Swope, without the piano. Thank you.
Now then, tonight, as I said, we have Franti and Teicher back with us. And they're going to do some remarkable things as they have done before. They have a little miniature Mississippi suite they're going to play tonight, and they put little rubber chucks on the piano, little pieces of cardboard and wood and all kinds of things. Franti and Teicher.
Unique material. In 1986, the Museum of Television and Radio did an exhibit of Ernie called The Vision of Ernie Kovacs. And in the booklet that I have here, Edie Adams wrote an article, and she said, one of the most memorable back-of-the-head creations was the famous Nairobi Trio. During a rehearsal in New York, Peter Hanley, that was the singer you saw in the to the left in the Lucia excerpt, then appearing with us as the traditional boy singer, brought in a recording of Solfeggio and suggested that Ernie listen to it. Within minutes, Ernie had us in the place for the premiere of the premiere performance of the Nairobi Trio. In subsequent engagements of this famous troupe, friends of ours such as Jack Lemmon, Frank Sinatra, and Tony Curtis would be among those who appeared with this madcap threesome. The first appearance of the Nairobi Trio was on April 21st, 1954, during his evening Dumont stint. It never saw national recognition until the performance you're going to see tonight. In fact, Dennis Rooney remembers seeing this out in Minnesota for the first time. This is July 16th, 1956, from the NBC Summer Replacement. And it is probably, I think, the best version Ernie ever did of it. He's in the middle, of course.
Ladies and gentlemen, we know that you've seen our last two shows and have been waiting to see the Nairobi Trio. Unfortunately, Ernie has told you in the past shows that they have been unable to make an appearance. But we are very happy to say that they are with us tonight. We went to a great deal of trouble and expense to bring them here, but here they are. The wonders of show business, ladies and gentlemen, the Nairobi Trio.
Thank you.
Worth waiting 2 weeks for. And here's the gentleman responsible for it all, Ernie Kovacs.
Ernie?
I'm the one in the middle, Mother. Did you know me?
We have time to say goodnight to, I guess, what has just been one of the most wonderful bunches of people we've had the pleasure to gather with for a long time. We'd like to bring on some of our friends, Edie Adams and Henry Lasco and Al Kelling, Bill Wendell, Louis Rodgers, Harry Sutton, you, thank you.
That creation of his, personally in his life, he was at his absolute lowest. His first wife had kidnapped his two daughters. He was in a desperate search to find them. And his relationship with Edie was on the rock. She had disappeared at the time that the first performance of the Nairobi Trio was done. She decided that she had enough of Ernie because he was such a crazy man. Only slept 2 hours a night, did all sorts of crazy things, and she decided to disappear for 6 weeks. And sometimes out of the abyss, some of the most inspirational things has come out of this man. Edie wrote on about something else about Ernie. When they got married in September of 1954 down in Mexico, where the former mayor of New York, O'Dwyer, proceeded over it, and they did the whole entire ceremony in Spanish that the Dwyer had to nudge them and say see at certain points because they didn't understand the ceremony at all, which is a typical Kovacs fashion. She said, when we were first married, his knowledge of music was limited to what would have been characterized as classical music of the month, a simple familiarity with a vague appreciation for the masters. Eventually, however, my Juilliard influence, Triumph, and Ernie's own record collection ultimately totaled 14,000 albums, and classical music, particularly that of Tchaikovsky, Haydn, and Bartok, became integral to his work. Whether listening to Tchaikovsky or the American composer Deems Taylor, Ernie envisioned pictures of music, sound to sight, as he said. Every time I hear a Deems Taylor, a little Deems Taylor, he once said, I just naturally reminded of celery stalks breaking. So I make pictures of it. That, of course, is exactly what he did. Celery stalks breaking in the time to Deems Taylor music, sardines in the can arising to the chorus line of dance, a cow shaking the bells around its neck as video accompaniment to the church bells in the 1812 overture. They all comprised Ernie's own MTV. Well, we're going to see that in a moment. Gary, here's a fifth example of the exposition from the Beethoven Fifth coming up. What we're going to see now are three of the classic Kovacs video pieces that were from the last ABC specials he did in 1961 and 1962. Pardon me? Oh, excuse me. That's right, four. Thank you. I wasn't looking. Four of his specials. The first one is to the exposition of the first movement of the Beethoven Fifth without an accordion in it, set to a poker game, which was from October of 61. And then from the first ABC special he did on April 20th of that year, the Russian dance from the Nutcracker Suite, and then his own conception of how the 1812 Overture should end. And then finally, one of the things that was from the last special he did when he was still alive, from December of 61, the story of A Drop of Water, where he uses most of the Lieutenant Kijé suite. For some stupid reason, all these videos were available on the White Star reissues, except for this one. For some stupid reason, they edited it out, and there are a number of people who have asked me, do you have that? Because they remember seeing this as one of the most incredible things ever done in the early days of videotape. So Joe, let's roll the tape.
Thank you. is the story of a drop of water.
quite extraordinary pieces of work, even in the especially for the fact that these were done in the early days of videotape, where everything had to be spliced and manually faded in and out. I got two closing selections, one not that well-known, the other one very well-known, but it's a theme in variations. It was well-known that Ernie hated sponsors, he hated the executives of any of the television networks, and on August 6, 1956, he started a routine where at the beginning of a skit, he's doing something in Africa, and he's known as Lena, Queen of the Jungle, and he gets a message saying, NBC executive wants to meet Lena. And as he goes, as the executive comes in, he falls right through the floor. At that point, he goes over to a tree and marks it off saying, I got one. Well, at the end of the show, Ernie decides that we're going to go to a television station in Italy. And things aren't exactly the way they're supposed to be happening, and all sorts of mishaps happen. And in one spot, you'll see another NBC executive fall through the floor as he comes in. And it will be duly noted. It's probably the wildest piece of live television, I think, that ever came out of the golden age of the 1950s. And since that day has never been totally aired in any form ever since. And of course, what happens is, in the one in 1956, it's the Italian street song. By 1959, it has turned into Our Sweet Mystery of Life. And of course, the usual craziness and nonsense from Ernie. And let's see if anyone can pick out the famous actor and conductor that's at the end of the second video. Joe?
Television has become popular in countries abroad at an accelerated rate. However, the industry, being even newer abroad than it is here, is going through growing pains while the technical end is being smoothed out. Now, here is Edie Adams as a visiting guest star with her whole troupe in an Italian television studio which has not quite yet reached perfection in production standards.
Ah, my honey, begging of me,
Next week, we have Boris Karloff, Ema Sumac. And now, how about a good night from the entire cast, huh?
I'm sure a nostalgic tear cascades from all of us at the warm memories of the uplifted beer steins of the student prince, the flower dresses of Blossom Time, or Nelson Eddy as a Royal Mounted Policeman. Here is Edie Adams as the star of an operatic road company contracted to do a performance in Italy at a local television station which only that morning went on the air for the first time. The costumes and some musicians from America have not arrived. However, the manager of the TV station has eagerly solved the situation by digging up some from a defunct opera group whose last performance had been a rather heavy Wagnerian one. To augment the orchestra, he has prevailed upon some of the local musicians who by day are, respectively, Neapolitan plumbers, Chianti bottlers, and pizza bakers. The cameramen are relatives of the station manager and are determined to make their first spectacular a good one. And so to station WLAZ-TV in Porto Lazzan, Italy.
quite an individual, missed by all those who knew him, and I don't think we'll ever see someone like that ever again. I went through a lot of the stuff. I could have gone on for another 2 hours of his use of video on music, but as a person, as a personality, unfortunately, he's all but forgotten. This is his 80th birthday. For all intents and purposes, when I check the internet, what I'm doing today is the only tribute scheduled for the whole year. Comedy Central had all this material, never bothered rerunning any of it. It's unfortunate. Hopefully generations will, appreciate what this man has done. His widow, Edie Adams, spent almost $400,000 collecting this material after he died, because everyone was throwing it out. They had no use for it. In fact, when I went to the Museum of Television and Radio on the microfiche cards for these NBC programs, someone had wrote in, Edie Adams owns all of these. She took them out of NBC because they were destroying this material. ABC was reusing the videotape for backgrounds for newscasts out in LA. They had no use for the material. This is a man who did not do vaudeville. He used the medium, sight and sound. And unfortunately, because of the time when he died, and there was no such thing as syndication, all this stuff almost went into oblivion. But I felt that it was important enough that, you know, for some levity, something different here, but the man was so unique so unique in what he did. He was the first one that actually used the medium of television. I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you, Seth. Thank you. You could field a couple of questions, you know, a couple of short questions.
Yeah. That was videotaped. That was early videotape. That's from ABC in 1961. Oh, no. But he did put in some stock footage in there that was from probably some U.S. government agricultural film of some sort, showing a waterfall, showing how probably, you know, electric energy was made or something. Yeah. No, those were all done on video. Those were all. Italian, get it right. Both were Italian.
They're both Italian, yeah. Come on, NBC, come on.
Right, you can hear it in the soundtrack where it gets clipped. And in fact, those shows that he did at ABC, he would book time in for a day, 8 hours. They'd be in there for 3 hours running straight through because he didn't want to break the momentum of what he was putting together. And at the end, he was in hock for over something like $500,000 out of his debt from back charges from ABC for overtime for paying the cameramen and everyone.
Now, Seth, one of the problems was if his shows had been bigger ratings getters, then maybe they wouldn't have mind so much spending that kind of money.
Yeah,
but
well,
he never really cracked the top five, did he?
No, the problem was he was such an innovator, nobody wanted to give him the break of a regular show.
Yeah.
NBC gave him a daytime show, they gave him the summer replacement for Sid Caesar. And one of the executives said to him one day, hey, Ernie, if you do real good, we'll give you a show. He said, what do you mean am I doing real good? I'm already on the air. And it was a problem. In fact, he had the great misluck when he was at CBS for a prime time in 1952. They put him opposite Milton Berle.
Oy.
How long do you think that lasts?
Death.
Literally 4 months.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, one other thing I meant to mention about the NBC one, the live one of the Italian radio station. That whole scene he conceived for the following manner. That was the first show where he had a big budget, as opposed to a budget of about $15 a week, as most of his shows were done, unfortunately. And he said to the NBC executives, if I can go under budget, I can keep the money, can I? They said, oh, no, we want it back. So Ernie said, if I'm not going to get it, they're not going to get it. And that's why you saw all those extras coming out and doing all those crazy things. He was going to come in right on budget.
Let's hear it for Seth Wenner. That was a great presentation, really. And he'll be around. You can ask him questions.
And Joe Patrick
and
over
Joe.
Here.
All right.
If it wasn't for him, this wouldn't have been happening.
Let's hear it for Joe.
Nice.